For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. Ed Jordanic is off on assignment. Coffey, let's do this. My voice is catching up. I was actually at the game Saturday, but let me start off maybe a little oddly. I'm usually the totally positive guy, but having been there at the game, some concerns popped up on me, and I'd be curious. We could spend all night talking about all the good things that go on, and we're going to do some of that in a minute here, but let me just drop a little bit on you and see what your reaction is. You know, I'm all about Notre Dame returning to glory, and for me, it's not just let's win some football games. I mean, this is all about let's get the program back to where it's in the national picture hunt. We're obviously not there yet. We saw some great signs on Saturday, but I got to tell you, one of the biggest concerns for me, because I watched some of the warm-ups, and right now the Fighting Irish have a program where they got a guy who cannot punt and doesn't even use the right technique in punting, and that's going to burn you in a game where a team like Navy, who goes up against a team like South Carolina and makes the game interesting, and all of a sudden you have a punt at the wrong time.
This whole 30-yard average thing is an absolute non-starter. And I noticed when he changed his delivery style to rugby style, it seemed to improve things a little bit. But we need someone who can put foot on the ball. I mean, that's really the bottom line. If your punter can't get quality yardage, then it really becomes a liability, because you think of most of your punts are coming from like somewhere like between your own 30 and your own 45. 30-yard punts, your opponent's almost starting in your territory, and as you said, that is eventually going to come back to kill you when you're giving your opponent short field after short field after short field, and it's...
Yeah, it's a handicap you can't go into big games with. It just USC, Stanford, and not to say that any of the other games on our schedule aren't big games either, but I mean they're all capable football teams. It's near and dear to my heart. I was a former walk-on at Notre Dame, Holtz's freshman year, so I'm a place kicker by nature, but I also punted in high school. But I was around the punters and the place kickers. During practice, we all went over to the side of the field. Now, this may be a good or a bad thing, but we didn't have a coach that worked with us on technique. And I'm imagining things haven't changed much in college football because you just didn't have the luxury to have a guy on your staff that was nothing but a specialist when it came to punting and kicking. So we'd go over there to the other field and just kick all day long. And I worked with Dan Sorsen, who was the punter at that point. Guys like that were on the team. Phelan was another guy. He was a good one, by the way. But, there's a technique to punting. There's a way to hold the ball. There's a way to drop the ball. The ball has to be dropped with the nose just barely pointing forward, down. And your foot, as you come up and lean back, you kind of lean to the right naturally for a right-footed kicker, and that's what drives a spiral off your foot. And the advantage in the spiral off your foot is the ball spirals in the air, which allows it to travel further. And yet we've got a guy that was kicking knuckleballs all day in warm-ups and went out and did the same thing, and yet every press conference we hear Brian Kelly say, well, he's our guy. He's the best. Believe me when I say it, he's the best. Well, that tells me that we got several punters on the team that have no technique whatsoever.
And how many scholarships are we spending on punters who can't do better than this guy who's knuckleballing all the time? I mean, I you hate to drop it on the kid. I mean, he's out there. I mean, he's not trying to do
this.
He's
giving it his all. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
It's a liability. You absolutely, positively cannot keep trucking this kid out there if he's going to keep shanking it off his foot and having punts that don't travel or that have no hang time. And I mean, you're given a field position, you're given a points, you are effectively undoing the good work your defense is doing, and even your offense is doing.
Absolutely.
While having this kid out here trying to work through his demons.
Right, and you know, the whole idea of this whole rugby style approach, that's a short term fix. We got lucky on Saturday with, number one, a punt return guy who maybe didn't really make the opportunities they had. Now, granted, I think the punts were effective, but those knuckleball punts, those rugby-style punts, they can easily bounce backwards. You know, they can land 30 yards, and instead of rolling for another 20, it stops right there and bounces backwards. So, yeah, so that's one big, huge concern. The other concern is we still, as a football team, are giving up way too much on special teams. And certainly at critical points. I mean, we've done this now three games in a row where at critical, you know, points in the game, we give up a big return. And I'm not sure yet if I can put my finger on it. I don't know if maybe we got too many young guys in there that were trying to get some time. But clearly, it's a bit of a concern when, you know, we're routinely giving up a 40 to 45-yard return every single game. And it seems to be.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know on one of the long returns we gave up, it seemed like the kick didn't have a lot of hang time to it. The receiver got it really fast. And I'm sure you, with your kicking background, know the longer that ball stays up there, the more time the defenders have to get down there to try to block, break the wedge open and get in there and try to stop him before he can get momentum. That return guy gets well and gets some momentum behind him. He's all that much harder to stop. And even if everyone stays in their lanes and tries, it's harder to get, if this guy's an extra two or three steps on you, you just made the job a million times harder. So,
yeah, you're right. But I would say, now, they give credit to our kicker, can't even think of his name.
Brinza,
right.
Yeah.
What's his last name? Yeah. He has done a heck of a job with the lift that he's getting and the ball landing, like, you know, literally at the 2 yard line. The 1 yard line with about as good a hang time as you can get. So he has been doing a heck of a job with that. On the one that you're citing, yeah, you're right. He did tend to not get as much hang time, and I got there pretty quickly. But, you know, each game it's happened to us, and that's a concern. Maybe not nearly as big of a concern for me as the punting. The punting is just a glaring issue. But you know, clearly that's it. The good news is, I think now we can talk about this, is it was a heck of
Absolutely.
A football game. I mean, it was absolutely what they needed, and they came out and they did it. And I think that all of the talk that was going on, you know, and I thought it was mostly, I mean, Vegas line pretty much told you before the game that is exactly what the experts think. But it rang true. I mean, Notre Dame came out, and even despite two turnovers early, just absolutely manhandled Michigan State offensively. And when's the last time we've done that to a Michigan
State
football
team? It's been a long
time.
Well, I think this was the largest margin of victory over Michigan State since 1993, I believe, which Lou Holtz's last year.
I think you're right.
Well, the one thing that jumped out at me, I mean, I'm not one of those guys that follows recruiting religiously. I'm one of those people who say, you know, give me the list of people we get in February. I don't want to get bogged down in why we didn't get this person and this and that. But the defense, the performance by the defensive front seven that we saw yesterday is a result of recruiting battles won. Guys like Lynch, Tuitt, Nix, these are the difference makers we've been looking for the last couple of years, and winning the recruiting battles and getting them on the field on our side, just a huge, huge, huge difference. Lynch is just an unbelievable player. This kid's a true freshman playing his third game, and he's blowing up a Big Ten starting offensive line. Jeez.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought him up, because I clearly thought he arguably could have been the difference in the game. You know, after he made a couple plays early, I was there in the stadium, and I had really good seats, so I could see from the end zone I was sitting. But the nice thing about being in the end zone is you see a lot of line play. You see a lot of holes open up. You see a lot of things. But I'll tell you what, Aaron Lynch has got ridiculously fast hands, and he has got explosive moves with just ripping by people. When I say rip by people, he puts his hand up and just flings people, and he explodes through his guy. And just makes great effort. I got to, you know, I thought to myself after that game, how is it that they felt like it was best not to have him on the field against
Michigan?
The
only reason might be you've got it with Michigan, you have an experienced mobile quarterback who could cause problems to an inexperienced lineman. But by the same token, I'd rather have Lynch out there making mistakes than anybody else out there. Just the sheer talent, absolutely unbelievable. And it makes such a big difference when you can get the kind of pressure Notre Dame was getting just with the front four. I think back like 1 or 2 years ago when our offensive line was bad and our opponents were getting that kind of pressure with four against us, it lets you do so much more on defense. You don't have to send six guys. You have to send five guys. You can send six, seven guys out into coverage and make it incredibly difficult for the opponent's offense to move because you've got four linemen that are just wreaking havoc and not needing any help. And it's just a big difference.
Yeah, it allows you to, what it does is allows you to gamble more, like Harrison Smith going after. You get that little bit of cheat that comes with the fact that you know you're going to have pressure on the guy. Not only that, but it forced, I think it was a factor in the game, because late Cousins knew that was coming. He absolutely knew that if guys weren't getting open pretty quick on their first and second cuts, chances are he's going to have somebody in his face and it wasn't going to be good. So what you tend to do in that situation is you don't wait for that to happen. And it forces you to make throws earlier than you really want to make them. And you know that clearly had an impact on the game, and it definitely makes a difference, no doubt about it. Our defensive line was about as good as it's been in a long time, and we've been waiting to see this, and it was evident in the game on Saturday. I mean, there was that. You also have to give a ton of kudos to Robert Bland and it's not just the interception at the end. I mean, he had some great defensive plays. He is a guy that just, you know, physically is there, but also mentally. I mean, he is just in the game from the get-go, and he makes good reads and has good decisions, and I just thought he played a heck of a ball game. And not to say that Gary Gray didn't. I thought he played great. You know, that very first pass that they made down the sidelines, you know, I'm sure a lot of people were thinking, oh, my God, here we go again. But he actually did turn on the ball and swiped at it and just missed it. Now it wasn't the best turn in the world, but he clearly was making an effort. But you know, his swipe, his hand, he just missed the ball. Cunningham was able to bring it in and haul it in for a decent pass. But I mean, he was right there with him. And as always, he's great in run support and showed
absolutely
it on Saturday. Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed with him. Lastly, the only maybe minor concern, I didn't really bring it up as one of my top two to start off the show, but you know, I clearly still think we're seeing the development of Tommy Rees where he's just not 1,000% comfortable yet with reading defenses and kind of taking mm-hmm. what they give you. You know, the best quarterbacks in college football have the ability and the knack to drop back in the pocket and based on their reads, know who to mm-hmm. then throw to. Whereas I think what Tommy does is, like the majority of quarterbacks, will go back and he's got options 1, 2, and 3. And clearly on that interception over the middle, he looked at option 1 and then saw option 2 and knew that Eifert's always a pretty sure thing and just immediately threw it without even beginning to think and read whether that drop linebacker was going to be in the spot that you just mm-hmm. don't want him to be in. Didn't even see him and just threw it. And you know, you like to believe what he said coming off is, yeah, I knew exactly that it was a big mistake because I knew that I didn't bother to read whether he was going to be there or not. And we had talked about it in film study and so forth. And so you got to take him at his word and you hope that is the case. But he still is at that point, I think, where he's just not quite all the way there. And that's where, when you do have somebody like that, it really puts your offense in a huge advantage.
Absolutely.
Huge. You know, Clawson was that kind of guy. There's a reason he only threw 2 interceptions, you know, deep into the season.
And then the question becomes, are we going to see Rees develop into that player, or is this... I'd like to see the decisions get a little better. I think one of the advantages that Reese has over Dane Crist is he's not afraid to go through his progressions. He does. I think one of Dane Crist's issues is that as he's going through his progressions, he gets nervous, or if something isn't there, he has trouble anticipating what is going to be there versus what's there now. He can't go through his progressions and not only see what's happening now, but seeing what the receiver is about to do, or what the defensive back is doing. He may look at a guy and say, he's not open, Tommy Reese. And if you see it on a couple of the throws that he makes, he's looking to go, okay, he's not open right now, but in 5 seconds when the ball gets there, he's going to be, because he's doing X, Y, and Z. So some of the throws he's getting in there are throws that I haven't seen Dane Crist make. Now, on the other hand, I think sometimes maybe he's a little bit too confident in what he can do, whether he says, hey, that guy's going to be open in 5 seconds. Well, 5 seconds later, the ball's there, guy's not as open, and boom, we have an interception. So, and it very well may be just a case of a true sophomore just trying to, he's a true sophomore, isn't he? I hope I didn't get that wrong. But trying to feel his way and learn to make those decisions. If he can start making those decisions better, he can only improve.
Yeah, and I think so. And it is early. I mean, I think, you know, we sit here and we nitpick on him. And the reality of the matter is he is a sophomore. You know, Clawson made plenty of mistakes his freshman year, got in a majority of the season. Into his sophomore year, you know, still was making some mistakes. So, you know, it's not fair to sit here and throw, darts at Tommy Reese. He played a heck of a ball game. He's a big reason why they're in the situation that they're in right now. And but you like to see some of these things get cleaned up, and if they do, you're talking about. I think the best news of everything on Saturday is that with some of these changes, Notre Dame is clearly showing signs that they can play with anybody in college football. And you know, that's not always been the case with us, obviously, in the last.
And obviously we want to see a little bit more of the not shooting ourselves in the foot. I think Michigan State was a decent team. However, I mean, they played to Florida Atlantic and somebody else in their first two games. This was their first real test, and Notre Dame just walked up and punched him in the mouth, and Michigan State really wasn't able to bounce back from that. So I'll be interested to see over the next two games. You've got Pitt and Purdue, teams that on paper seem pretty weak, although Pitt gave Iowa everything they wanted this past week. I would like to see us continue the momentum, keep the mental mistakes to a minimum, and take two teams that we really should handle if we're making the progress that we believe we want to see, and really handle them. Not only because there's opportunities for two road wins, and then come home for a couple home games in a row.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And the best news is that, you know, after watching the game Saturday, the indications are that's a potential reality. I think that this team should be able to get better. They should be able to improve. They got an opportunity now in their schedule to start solidifying their hold and making these improvements and winning football games in the process. But it is that, you know, eliminating those major mistakes. I mean, I was there in the stadium when Goodman dropped the punt. Now, I will say this: I was perfectly positioned. I mean, that ball looked like it was coming right at me from where I was sitting. And I got to be honest with you, I was nervous when it came off the guy's foot because it was an absolute knuckleball. I mean, the wind was swirling in Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday. It was an absolute knuckleball coming to Goodman. Now, I did come home and watch the replay, and it looked like it really went right through his breadbasket. I mean, it hit him right in the gut. To his defense, because I was sitting right there when the ball was up in the air coming down to him, it was absolutely a knuckleball, and it was moving all over the place. It may have been one of those ones you just wish he would have just gotten away from, because it's just sometimes they're that difficult to catch. However, you know, having said that, and the way that the team responded, and they did, the defense came out and started bringing the crowd into it, waving their arms up, asking people to get behind them. And I don't know the last time you've been to a game, but in my situation, our section that I was in, every single third down, I think except for one in the entire game, did they not stand. So they were standing at every third down defensive.
Well, that's good. That's the kind of interest
situation.
That's the kind of interest and energy we need.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff you need. Yep, absolutely. So if we can do that, things will look and bode very well for this football team. It'll be interesting to see how things shake out these next three or four games, because this is where it all starts, you know, leading into USC. And I, you know, at least on the surface, it really looks good after Saturday's huge win for the Irish. All right, well, let's leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.